Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Fortcast, the official podcast of Fort Healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Anderson, ear, nose, and throat doc and president and CEO. I'm very excited today to welcome a returning guest to the Fortcast, Dr. Riad Moussatif. Dr. Moussatif and I will be talking today about congestive heart failure. And Dr. Moussatif has been with our organization now for going on 2 years, and he hails from Kenosha and comes from a very large family. So, Dr. Moussatif, could you please say hi to our listeners?
Well, hi, Dr. Anderson. Happy New Year, and thank you for having me back on your show. I appreciate it. Hello to everyone. As Dr. Anderson said, my name is Riad Moussatif. I'm an interventional cardiologist, and I'm born and raised in Kenosha, and I'm a double badger. I went to University of Wisconsin, both undergrad and medical school, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, that's fantastic. We're off to a great start already because I, too, am a double badger. So we got double badgers talking about congestive heart failure today. So, Dr. Moussatif, if we can just start off, congestive heart failure is such a huge topic in medicine. We see patients with congestive heart failure admitted to our hospital all the time. Can we just start with, or could you educate us on what exactly is congestive heart failure?
It is exactly like the plumbing in your house. And I used to say I was an expensive plumber until I hired a plumber recently. And then I realized I'm actually a very inexpensive, cheap plumber. But the fluid that's inside your body, first of all, most of our body is made up of fluid. But that fluid, water specifically, is in different areas of your heart. And we all have blood vessels. And there's two different systems of blood vessels in our body. One are called arteries. And those are the vessels that have the blood that has all the oxygen and everything in it. And that gets delivered as your heart pumps out a big pipe called an aorta. And the way to think of that, it's just like the main water pipe that comes to your house. And that's the good, clean water coming from the city, if that's possible. But we're in Wisconsin. We have good water. But that's the main pipe. And then we have a drainage system, and we call those veins. And the only reason I bring this up is because people kind of use those interchangeably, arteries and veins, but they're different. Arteries are the water clean from the water company coming to your house, and the veins are the drainage system. Now, that water that's inside those pipes needs to stay inside those pipes. And when, for some reason, that water comes out of those pipes, it can leak out of those pipes, and that goes into different areas of your body and can cause flooding. Just like if the sub pump from your basement went out, it could cause flooding. And if the veins or arteries are leaking, like leaking pipes in your house, that could cause flooding. If your sub pump in your basement fails, that can cause a backup, and that can cause flooding. And so those are the things of heart failure, when there's something wrong in our system. And there's so many different parts of our body that control that. Your kidneys, what help get the water out when you go to urinate. If they go bad, they can cause a backup and cause heart failure. If you lack protein, like people who are very malnourished or have liver disease, the protein actually acts like a sponge and keeps the water inside your blood vessels. And if that deteriorates, then your water will leak out in your body and cause heart failure. And if your heart fails, and that's what everybody thinks when they hear heart failure, they think it's mainly your heart. And that is a big reason that causes heart failure, but it's not the only reason. So to summarize, heart failure is whenever the fluid that's supposed to be in your arteries and veins is not, and it's leaked out in your body. And that can cause a lot of problems. People can notice swelling in their lower extremities, swelling in their stomach. They can become extremely short of breath. They have problems laying flat. They can get chest pain. Those are all symptoms of heart failure.
That is a wonderful definition. And Dr. Moussatif, in your experience, if you could talk a little bit, now I often think about congestive heart failure in the lungs and essentially fluid building up in the lungs. So in your experience, what are kind of like the first symptoms that somebody would notice if they're going down this path of congestive heart failure?
Yeah, so you made a great point. So if the problem in heart failure is on the arterial side, the arteries, that's the stuff with the clean water that gets pumped with oxygen to your whole body. If there's a problem on that side, and that could either be your kidneys or your heart, that usually backs up into your lungs. But when you have a vein problem where it's just the water is leaking out of the sewage, It doesn't go to your lung, but it goes to your legs. You can get swelling, and they can be very hard to tell apart. And that's why we do special ultrasounds of the heart called echocardiograms. And we do blood tests to check your protein and kidneys so that we can help figure it out. But as everybody who's listening can imagine, your oxygen exchange happens at a very small micro level in your lungs at these little tiny things called alveoli. And the way you can visualize it, it's like when we were little kids and you would just stare at a leaf and you learned in school photosynthesis, how the sun goes into those little leaves at a very small level and then delivers energy to the leaves, and that feeds the energy to the rest of the plant or the tree. The oxygen exchange, when you take a deep breath, that goes into one half of the lung, and on the other half of the lung are your pulmonary, we call them veins, but they're little balls called alveoli. They're very small and they're very thin. And that's where the oxygen then sneaks across as you breathe and reoxygenates your blood. It's kind of like if you had a little pool of water and you put a sponge next to it, the water would go towards the sponge. And that's exactly what happens in your lungs. But now if you have fluid in your lungs, now the oxygen has to go out of the oxygenated airway and has to cross the river of the fluid and try to get into your blood vessels. That's very hard for it to do. You're going to immediately sense being short of breath. And so people start to notice the weight gain. And what we do is we tell people to weigh themselves every day. And if they gain more than 3 pounds in a day or 5 pounds in a week, that's not fat, that's water. So weight gain happens first, and then people become short of breath. And they can also notice swelling. Your socks leave really big marks in your legs and your stomach kind of swells up. So weight gain, number one, swelling and shortness of breath come after. Those are the main symptoms.
Okay, so if somebody is concerned that they may be starting down the congestive heart failure path and they go see their physician or their provider, you mentioned something about echocardiograms, but what is the initial workup? So when you see a provider and they're concerned about potential congestive heart failure, how does the physician or provider go about diagnosing congestive heart failure?
So congestive heart failure itself is what we call a clinical diagnosis. You can have a bad heart, you can have a bad kidney, and you can have low protein, and you don't have to necessarily be in, quote, heart failure. So the clinical diagnosis is made after your provider takes a good history and gives you a good physical exam. There's things that we listen to that they can identify. They can hear extra heart sounds, and they can actually hear fluid in your lungs. It sounds like crackles, almost like that little plastic pop things that we do, you know, when you're a little kid and it comes in the packages and you crack it. We can actually hear that in the bottom of your lungs. The physician can see swelling in your legs. And we have a vein in our neck called the jugular vein, and our good providers can actually see that, and they can see it pounding, and that's another sign of heart failure. So the suspicion or the diagnosis is clinically made. Then after that, to confirm their clinical diagnosis and observations, there's actually a simple blood test that they can do, and it's called BNP, and B like Bradley, N like Nancy, and P like Paul. It stands for brain natriuretic peptide. Our heart and our body are so amazing. The heart can actually sense if it's being stretched with too much fluid, and then it would leak out this hormone, which is actually a signal. It's almost like a walkie-talkie smoke signal. And the BNP, that thing would go to your kidneys and tell it, hey, we have too much fluid, and it'll try to make your kidneys urinate out more fluid. That'll compensate for a while, and then eventually it fails, and then the fluid, as you suggested, backs up into the lung. So summarize, heart failure is a clinical diagnosis that's made after you see your provider and they take a good history and physical, and then it can be confirmed with a simple blood test called BNP. They would also do a chest x-ray, which can also see the fluid, and then if they continue to suspect it, they would do more blood tests to check your kidneys and protein, and then they would do an ultrasound of your heart, and the medical term for that is an echocardiogram, where we can actually see how the heart is pumping.
So, Dr. Musatif, with the echocardiogram, can you gauge a patient's severity of heart failure?
Yeah, it's a great question, and absolutely. And not to get too specific, but there's different types of heart failure. Heart failure, when we look at your heart, we're looking, the heart actually sits in a bag, a sac that we call a pericardium. Sometimes you can get a virus, and that can fill up with fluid that can cause heart failure, and we look for that. Your heart is made up of multiple valves. They're little doors that control the blood flow throughout your heart, and sometimes they can go bad, and they can go bad in two ways. They can become leaky, and that's called regurgitation, or they can become sticky, and we call that stenosis. They don't open. So either they don't open or they're open too wide, and that can cause heart failure. The other thing that can go bad with your heart is the pumping function. And I go back to the example of the sub pump in the basement. If the sub pump is not pumping properly, then it won't be able to effectively remove the fluid out of your house and your basement will swell up. We can actually see how the heart is pumping. The other thing that can happen is something called diastolic function, which is just how the pump relaxes. So you can imagine the sub pump again. When the sub pump pumps, you can imagine it pushing down like a piston to push the fluid forward. But then there's the other motion of the piston coming back up. That is diastole or diastolic function. As we get older, the heart gets stiffer, and the relaxation, the pump going back up to its top position, doesn't happen quick enough. That can also cause heart failure. We can see all those things when we do an echocardiogram.
So the echocardiogram provides you with a wealth of information on the status of the heart when somebody has congestive heart failure. And Dr. Moussatif, once you know somebody has congestive heart failure and you've been able to assess it with not only physical examination and lab work, but also an echocardiogram, what sort of treatment measures do you discuss with your patients?
So just like if you come home and your house is flooded, the first thing we have to do is figure out the reason. So we call that medicine a diagnosis. We have to find the exact reason why you're in heart failure in order for us to fix it. So it depends. If it is the kidneys, then we're going to give you specific medicines to help your kidneys, and people can actually go into full renal failure and need dialysis. That's where a nephrologist, who's a kidney doctor, would actually have to have people go 3 times a week to a center and remove fluid from their body. If it's malnutrition or liver failure, we address that. If it's a venous problem, we address that. Now, if it's your heart, it depends on what the heart problem. If you have fluid around the sac, we can drain that and we take the fluid out. If it's a valve problem, then we will fix your valve. And if the heart is not pumping properly, it's been damaged and it's not squeezing the way it's supposed to squeeze. And I hope I'm not confusing people, but then if the heart doesn't pump well, it can be two different reasons. One could be you could have blockages in your coronary arteries, and those are arteries that supply actually oxygen to the heart itself. They could be blocked or damaged, and that's what causes heart attacks. And then we would have to fix those in order for your heart to get better. If you don't have blockages, then you could have caught a virus. There could be all these other reasons that can cause, we call it non-ischemic cardiomyopathy. Ischemic cardiomyopathy means that you have blockages. Non-ischemic cardiomyopathy means you have a heart that's not pumping, but your arteries that feed your heart are wide open. So there is a long list of reasons that can cause non-ischemic cardiomyopathy. At that point, we would then start medications. We have guideline-directed medical therapy for heart failure. We have multiple classes of medications that are designed to get your heart pumping back again. And so we would first make a diagnosis, and then after making a diagnosis, we would tailor the treatment specifically to the cause of the heart failure.
Well, I got to tell you, Dr. Moussatif, just listening to you talk about this topic, congestive heart failure, I had no idea that it's basically a multi-system entity, and the heart is just one small part of it. So really, you have to investigate a lot of the human body to find the root cause and then tailor your decision-making and treatment according to the main cause. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Well, I got to tell you, I learned a ton about congestive heart failure. And if you could talk a little bit about when we get a little bit more elderly, we see a lot of congestive heart failure patients in our hospital, and it typically takes a team of physicians to take care of the inpatient congestive heart failure. Can you talk a little bit about that?
As we get older, just normal part of aging, all those things that we talked about as causes of heart failure start to add up. And a lot of times, you know, the old cliches. When I was younger, I hated all my dad's old cliches, but they come true. And there's a reason why they stick around for hundreds and thousands of years, these sayings, but the straw that broke the camel's back. And so as we age, people can go into heart failure one day. Well, why weren't they into heart failure yesterday? Well, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. As we get older, people who are listening probably have sometimes problems urinating, the kidneys don't function properly. All of our blood vessels, unfortunately, become stiff. So when I was talking about plumbing, and I was using the example of pipes and drains, those pipes are plastic or lead or whatever they are. They're very stiff and they're not dynamic. But the body is so unbelievable that when I study it, sometimes it scares me how complex it is. And even in 2025, how little we know. But the blood vessels in our bodies are living organisms. They're very dynamic. There's multiple layers to every pipe, and they can breathe. They can expand. They can contract. They can open up and let things in and out. And those things are all important to control our blood pressure, to control what's inside the vessels and what gets out of the vessels. But as we age, we lose a lot of that ability. They get more stiff. The other thing that happens, in addition to your kidneys not functioning as well as we get older, they're not very good at getting the fluid out as much. The liver doesn't function as well. Nutrition in our elderly becomes important because they can become malnourished as they get older, not getting enough protein in their body. The other thing is that the heart itself, remember, I'm going to go back to that term that I used before, diastole or diastolic dysfunction. And again, to remind everybody, that has to do with how the heart relaxes. And the analogy is the sub pump in the basement. The sub pump squeezes, but then the sub pump has to relax in order to fill back up again. And that relaxation pump is diastolic function. Our hearts naturally get stiffer as we get older. So then what happens is you have a culmination of all these aging effects, aging on the vessels that makes them stiffer, aging on your kidneys that make them not as efficient at getting out fluid, aging on your liver and your nutrition, because remember that protein acts like a sponge inside the blood vessels to keep the fluid in there, and then you develop a stiff heart. In addition, we develop arrhythmias. So back to the analogy of the sub pump. So your sub pump pumps, but how does your mechanical sub pump in your basement know when to pump? It has a computer and a relay that can control it and say pump, pump, pump. Our hearts have the same exact thing. We have a region in our heart, generically we term the pacemaker region, that tells our heart when to pump. But one of the most common arrhythmias that can happen as we age, and many of the people listening either have it or know somebody who has it, is called atrial fibrillation. And that's where the top of the heart starts dancing to its own tune, and it doesn't pump properly anymore. That can also cause a heart failure to develop. So it's most likely a culmination of a lot of events of aging that happen that push these people into heart failure as we get older. And that's why, as you pointed out, when people get admitted to the hospital, we usually, and we do, use a multi-specialty approach where we get our intensive care doctors or our internal medicine physicians. We also get our nephrologists involved. We may get our nutritionists, social workers involved, and our cardiology involved, all of us as a team, to do a team approach on the patient. And medicine is becoming more complicated, where maybe in the old days you would have one family doctor who would be well-versed, and I'm sure the family doctors that were before you and I, Dr. Anderson, had a lot more skills, a different skill set than we do now because we have so much of our teams, but they were able to take care of everything. Now it becomes so complex that we use a team approach because a lot of the treatments that we use to treat heart failure can also damage other organs. So as we try to get fluid off your body, we give you medicine to force your kidneys to urinate and get rid of fluid. That can damage the kidneys, and that's why it's important to have nephrology on board. The fluid in the lungs, sometimes we get pulmonologists, lung doctors on board, and then our internists to manage everything else, especially for our elderly patients. So it's a really a team approach. And the reason is because it's multiple organs involved as we get older.
Very well said. Yeah, the team approach is definitely the best approach when it comes to treating patients with congestive heart failure. Dr. Moussatif, I can't thank you enough for being on this episode of the Fortcast and talking to us about congestive heart failure. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Fortcast. If you did, please share it on your social media channels. And please also check out our full library on our website of other Fortcast episodes. Once again, this is Dr. Michael Anderson saying thank you for listening and have a great rest of your day. So long.